The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So welcome again. So for those who are a little later. And today, I'd like to continue with the theme of the Satipatthana Sutta. I heard that Andrea has been covering Satipatthana Sutta for the last months, and that she's already in the section of the Dhammas. But I would like to hark back to the section on the body, and specifically on the four elements meditation. And just as a very short recap, the Satipatthana Sutta is about the four foundations of mindfulness: body, feeling tone, mind, and dhammas, the mind objects. And inside the section of the body, there are different meditations that we can do, different things that the Buddha offers us. And one of them is the elements. So I'll start with a general introduction to the four elements. Like, what are they again? And what characteristics do they have? And then I'd like to give a more in-depth exploration through a different sutta, where the Buddha explains a little bit deeper about what the four elements are and what lessons we can learn from them. And then lastly, I'd like to make it a little practical, like how can we apply that to our meditation and also in our daily lives. In the Satipatthana Sutta, the four elements are actually covered only very briefly. I will quote the biggest part of the sutta that about the four elements, which is relatively short. And the Buddha says, "A practitioner reviews the same body, however it is placed, however disposed, by way of elements thus. In this body, they are the earth element, the water element, the fire element, and the air element." End quote. And then he gives a simile of a butcher and a slaughtered cow. And the take on that is that the Buddha says, like, okay, this cow, when it's still alive, we see it as a cow. But once the butcher has sliced it up into different pieces of meat, we see it as meat, and we don't really see the cow anymore. So that's a simile that he gives. And some people, it says in the commentaries, it says some people get this easily, like they understand from this short description plus this simile, like, oh, I know what to do now. But there are also people described in the commentaries who don't really get that. And I'm certainly one of them. When I read this, I'm like, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do now. So there are also longer explanations in the suttas, in other suttas. And I will get to that in a little bit. But I first want to describe the four elements and give a little bit of a sense how we can experience them. Because they are, in a way, they are concepts, like earth, water, fire, and air are concepts. But what the Buddha wants to point to is the actual sensations that we can experience in the body. For example, the earth element, according to the commentaries, is hardness and softness, heaviness and lightness, and roughness and smoothness. So we can directly experience those aspects in ourselves. We can experience hardness and softness, for example. For water, it is said that it's the aspects of flowing and cohesion. Flowing is obvious, I think. And cohesion, we can see that, for example, with dough, if we want to make dough out of flour, we need to put water in order for it to become dough. So the water is the cohesive element there. And the water is kind of the cohesive element in our body too. And then we get fire, And those aspects are heat and cold, or just the range of temperature that we can experience. And air is supporting and movement. So the air element puts things into movement. So movement in our body, but also movement outside of like the wind through the trees or other beings that are moving. And a supporting element, supporting aspect, what is meant by that is, for example, the uprightness of the body. Like we don't fall over, we stay upright, and that's due to the air element. So if we want to get a little bit of a sense of each element, we can maybe, right now, you can maybe touch into, for the earth element, like if you're sitting on a chair or a bench or wherever you're sitting on, but does it feel hard or soft right now in your buttocks? And if you're sitting on a very cushy surface, then it's probably soft. But if you're on like a bench, you might be experiencing hardness. And for water, we can experience the saliva in our mouth. Also when we swallow, for example, we feel it go down the throat. And temperature for fire, well, it's easy. Maybe you can feel the temperature of your hands. Are they warm or cold right now, or just right? And then for the air, we can feel the small movements in the body. Like we're all blinking with our eyes probably every once in a while. And the rest of the body probably makes little adjustments all the time. And then the big one for the air element is, of course, the breath. We can feel our breath coming in and out and feeling the movement that causes in the chest and the belly. So it's the elements are in our body. So they're internally, but they're also outside in all matter externally. So all of that internally and externally, all matter is built from these four elements, according to the Buddha, which is kind of a classification system, you could say. And we can also see that in science, they say like our bodies are made of the same particles as the rest of the universe. So our bodies are made of the same elements as the rest of the universe, in Buddhist terms then. So that was a little bit of a general overview of the elements. And now I'd like to go to a sutta that provides a little bit more insight into what can we do with this, or what are the lessons that we can learn from this. And sutta is the longer advice to Rahula. Rahula was the Buddha's son, as most of you probably know. So the Buddha gives advice to his son in this sutta. It's the Majjhima Nikaya 62. And in that sutta, first of all, he lists like how can we find the earth element in the body? And then he gives a whole bunch of examples like hair, nails, bones, and also skin, flesh, intestines, and a whole bunch more. And then he says the water element is, for example, blood, sweat, saliva, urine, etc. And the fire element is that which properly digests food, that which ages, etc. And then for the air, the Buddha says it's winds in the belly or the bowels, winds that flow through the limbs, and of course the breath. So that's all still very descriptive. But then the Buddha continues with giving a deeper advice. So that's a little bit what I said earlier, like some suttas go a little deeper, so we can maybe understand a little bit better what the Buddha understood, what the Buddha meant in the Satipatthana Sutta. Because, I mean, at least for me, I don't really immediately understood what he meant there. So the Buddha says in the Majjhima Nikaya 62 to Rahula, both the internal earth element and the external earth element are simply earth element. And that should be seen as it actually is, with proper wisdom thus. This is not mine, this I am not, this is not myself. When one sees it thus, as it actually is with proper wisdom, one becomes disenchanted with the earth element and makes the mind dispassionate towards the earth element. And then, so end quote, and then the Buddha continues with the other elements, like the water element, the fire and the air element are simply water, fire and air element. And they are not mine, they're not, I am not, I am, and they are not myself. So that's interesting. The earth element internally and externally are simply the other, the earth element, and same for the others. And we can see that in ourselves, the earth element, simply the hardness and the softness, the roughness and the smoothness, lightness and the heaviness in the body. And externally, we can maybe know like a tree, we can feel the hardness and maybe the roughness of the bark. And a stone, we can feel the hardness of the stone and maybe the coldness if it's been outside in the cold, or maybe the warmth when the sun has been on the stone. So we see that internally and externally, we can find these aspects of the earth element and the other elements. And it's interesting to note that all objects have basically all four elements in them. So a tree is not only just hard and rough, it is also sap going through it to keep it alive. So that's the water element. And there's the movement of the leaves and the movement of the growth, which is an air element, and the growth is the fire element. And the tree has also a certain temperature. But like the tree, we can say, is mostly earth element. And then there are some of the other elements in there too. Same with even something like water. You think it's just water, but the water has a temperature, and water can move, and it can even be very hard. Like it can shape the Grand Canyon, for example. So, so what we find internally as earth element and externally as earth element is simply earth element. And the other elements, of course, as well. And that brings us to the teaching that none of these elements can be seen as mine. And that is one of the important lessons that comes from the teachings on the elements. So, for example, the food that we eat becomes our body. So if we eat an apple, we have the apple in our hands, and we see the apple, and we think this is outside of us. This is an apple outside of me. This is not me. And then we start eating the apple, and it starts getting down our digestive tract. At some point, the apple becomes me. But when is that? We really don't think about that often, and we kind of take it for granted that our food becomes us, or our drinks, the water element becomes the body. So it's interesting to contemplate that a little bit. Also an example is the warmth of the sun on our face, or if the furnace is burning, or if we are running the AC because it's warm. The temperature from outside influences our body, and our body respectively warms up or cools down. Was that our warmth? So now our body that is warm? Where does our body start and the external world start? And then, of course, the breath, very obvious one. When we breathe in, that becomes the air becomes us. And the air molecules, all the oxygen is being absorbed, and other nutrients from the air are being absorbed, and things are going out again, like CO2 that we don't need. So when does the breath, when does the oxygen become the body, become us? So we really identify with this body. It's my body, it's my pain, it's my breath. I am walking. But when we inspect this a little bit closer, then we start to see there's only these elements, and these elements are constantly in flux. Like we're breathing constantly. There's a constant exchange going on in the breath. We might be sweating. The blood is flowing through our veins. Our bowels are working. There's usually like constantly tiny movements of the body, and sometimes big movements of the body, of course. It's constantly changing temperature. So if you think about it like that, can we consider any of these elements to be me or mine or myself? And if we breathe in and we breathe out, like, is the breath when we've breathed out, is it still mine? Or when you spit out your saliva, is it still yours? Or do you still think like, oh, I'm gonna pick that up again and take it? It's probably not. And even like your arm, like, is your arm yours? Like, what if your arm gets cut off? When does it stop to become your arm? At some point you think like, oh, this is not my arm anymore. My body is now without an arm. And you can also get things removed during surgery. Like one of my relatives had liver cancer and part of the liver had to be removed. And then like once the liver is still in the body, we think this is just my body with this liver. And then once the part of the liver gets removed, we don't think that part of the liver is us anymore. But there are big examples, but we have small examples too, like nails and hair. And if we are bleeding or if our skin is dry and it comes off, or when there's pus or urine. So often we have this kind of a little bit of delusional notion that there is an inside and an outside, and that those are different. This body is here and the tree is over there. But that's not really possible, like, because there's a constant exchange between inside and outside. So the tree took our CO2 out of the air, processed it, and gave us back oxygen. And when we pass away and we get buried under a tree, and the tree might take our nutrients of our body and the elements and start to grow and flourish because of our nutrients. Or we might eat the fruits of the tree. So this boundary of our body is fluid in a way. It is just a changing, flux of phenomena happening, of these elements changing. And then we can see also that simile of the cow, that our body is actually really the same. So the cow was chopped up into meat, and we don't really see it as a cow anymore. And so is our body made up out of these elements, and we don't have to chop up our body, luckily. So we can just see, oh, there's these different elements present. And that's just a contemplation we can do. We don't have to do actively something with our body to notice that. It's just something we can know and experience for ourselves. It's also something you can see in walking meditation, for example, when you really start to pay attention to just the sensations that are happening when you're walking. At some point, there's not like the leg moving, but there's just sensations going on. So we lose a little bit of that identification with our body, with, oh, this is my leg moving. No, there's just sensations. And sometimes when I practice through this lens, I see, for example, with the breath, oh, this is not my breath. There's just a sensation of movement, of pressure, of pushing, which is the air element. it's not my coolness. It's just a sensation of coolness happening, which is just the fire element. So through this contemplation, through these instructions from the Buddha, or this information from the Buddha, we can come into contact with the actual sensations that are happening in the body, because that is where the elements point to the actual sensations. And often we use concepts like, oh, this is breathing. So we could try it out for a moment. If you're ready, you could, if it's good for you, you can close your eyes and try for a moment to breathe in and out as well. And just only pay attention to the direct sensations and not put a label on it like this is breathing. Just the sensations of how, in whatever way they come forward in your body. You don't even have to name the sensations. It's really about the direct sensation, direct experience. And you can let that go again if you feel like you was enough for you. And this way of seeing, this way of looking at the body, can help us with being with what arises, just letting it be as it is. Since it is not me or mine or myself, but just a sensation. And that can be very freeing. It can give less attachment to how things should be or what I want there to be right now. But just kind of more of that equanimous, like, ah, this is here right now. This is just a sensation, just nature. And I want to quote the Buddha again, the same little bit of the quote that I gave earlier. He says, when one sees it thus, as it actually is, with proper wisdom, one becomes disenchanted with the earth element and makes the mind dispassionate towards the earth element. And the same for the other elements. End quote. So when we see these aspects of the elements, these direct sensations, as not me or mine or myself, then we are also probably less passionate about it and less enchanted with the experiences. And we start to be able to see that it is just nature doing its thing. Nature inside of the body, nature outside of the body, just in this constant flux, constantly going in and out, constantly in contact with each other, intertwined. So maybe you'll pick that up already, but that's also a pointer towards impermanence. So it's not only the not-self aspect, but also an impermanence aspect that comes forth here. And we are not in control of this bodily experience for the most part. I mean, we can control if we want to lift our arm, but often if pain arises or discomfort or the warmth or the coolness of our body, or some of the tiny movements that happen to just stay upright, for example, are not in our control and are constantly changing. And our body is maybe not as solid as we thought because of this constant change, this constant in and out flow of elements, or these aspects of the elements. So we've looked at the elements in general and a little bit at the deeper meaning, the impermanence and the not-self aspect of it. And now I'd like to give you a little bit of information or hints on how to apply this in meditation and to apply it in daily life as well. So it is something we can just every once in a while pick up. It's not something maybe as a standard practice. Maybe you will find it useful as a standard practice. It's totally up to you. But there's a formal way of doing the four elements meditation, that the way I've learned it, and I think that's from the Paok tradition as a meditation master in Burma. And he recommends scanning the body. So we either start at the feet or we start at the head, and we just then go down or up. So in my example, we're going to start at the feet and we are going to scan the body for the earth element. So there were these six aspects of the earth element. You can pick one aspect or look at all six or whatever works for you. So the hardness and the smoothness, the heaviness and the lightness and the roughness. Sorry, hardness and the softness, heaviness and lightness and roughness and smoothness. So you scan from the feet through the body where there is any experience of hardness, for example, or softness. And then when you get to the head, you scan back down again from the head to the feet for the water element, the flowing and the cohesion aspect. And sometimes this might be a little bit conceptual, which is fine. But yeah, you can try to stay with direct sensations. And if you don't really know what element it belongs to, then it's also fine. Just know, oh, this is just a direct sensation, so it must be from one of the elements, but I just don't know right now. And that is fine. So then we're at the feet again, and then we go back from the feet to the head for the fire element. So we scan for temperature, heat and coldness, or the just rightness of the temperature. And then the last scan, we go down from the head to the feet for the air element. And we can notice tiny movements. We can notice the supporting aspect, so an uprightness of the body, that you know our head's not falling down, or if we don't use a backrest, that our spine is upright. So that's the formal four elements meditation. And there are variations on four elements meditation that are probably out there findable. I wanted to give you the formal version that I learned through the Paok method. And in daily life, we could also really use these four elements, these teachings on the four elements. For example, just in general, we can be aware of the body during the day, being aware that the body is made up out of these four elements. We can see like, oh, this is just the air element coming in with the breath right now, or this is the food and drink that I'm taking in, and that's made up. These foods and these drinks are made up out of the elements. They're hard or they're soft or they're watery. And these elements are now going to become part of this body. And see, like, oh, after a while, if you've eaten, like, oh, this is now still in my body, even though I've just put in all these external things in my body, just being aware of that is already super useful. And then temperature, you can be aware of the warmth and the coolness during the day. Maybe we go out for a walk and we feel the sun on our face, the warmth. Or we're in the office building and the AC is blasting at us and we feel really cold. And then we can see also that the objects that we encounter during the day, maybe other beings, the trees, the buildings, plants, cars, whatever it is, are all made up out of elements. And that knowing that those are made up out of elements without really like touching them, for example, is a little bit of a conceptual exercise again, because we kind of know from our experience, oh yeah, the car feels smooth and cold, for example. If we don't touch it, we just kind of know that. So it's kind of a reflection then, or a contemplation that we can use. So this is, even though the elements really point to, or the Buddha's teachings really point to this direct experience, sometimes we do use the concepts in a useful way. Then I'd like to end with a quote from Bhikkhu Nyanananda. It was a Sri Lankan monk. He died a while ago. And Bhikkhu Nyanananda says, it's actually a very interesting, nice summary of what I've been talking about. And he uses the primary elements, which is the four elements, same as the four elements. So he says, this so-called individual or person is in fact formed out of the primary elements that are obtained outside of it. So then the whole idea of an individual or a person is a mere perversion. That is why it is called asmimana, the conceit I am. In truth and fact, it is only a conceit. This should be clear when we reflect on how the pure air gets caught up as an in-breath, only to be ejected after a while as a foul out-breath. And portions of primary elements, predominating in earth and water, get involved as food and drink, to make a few rounds within, only to be exuded as dirty excreta and urine. This way, one can understand the fact that what is actually there is only a certain delimitation or measuring as internal and external. What sustains this process of measuring or reckoning is the duality, the notion that there are two things. So then, the supreme deliverance in this dispensation is release from this duality. Release from this duality is at the same time release from greed and hate. Thank you for your kind attention. Now we have some time for questions, if there are any, or if you want to share something about your experience in the meditation. Yeah, feel free to unmute yourself. And yeah, Anne.
So that was really very helpful. I love the progression of your talk. And then the ending and of the process of being released from greed, hatred. So I'd just love to hear that last phrase of the monk who you quoted, whose name I didn't get, but I'd love to hear that phrase again, please.
Yeah, the last phrase only, right?
Yes.
Release from this duality is at the same time release from greed and hate. And I can send you the quote if you like.
Yes, thank you. Maybe you can put it in the chat.
Yeah.
Or send it. Yeah, anyway, that's profound. And what's the name of the monk?
Bhikkhu Nyanananda. It's hard to copy this.
If you can put it in the chat, if not, that's okay.
Yeah, I'm trying to let's see if this works. No, it doesn't. Well, let me copy it.
Sorry.
There we go. No, it still doesn't let me copy it.
Okay, so no worries. I don't want to take up too much time on this, but thank you.
Okay, I can send it. If anyone wants to, I can send it to whoever would like to have a copy. Just let me know you can private chat me your email address if you like.
Thank you.
Yeah, Jen.
This may be a little too heady, but you know, the four elements were the prevailing understanding at the time of physical reality, at the time of the Buddha. That's my understanding anyway. And now we have, you know, molecules and atoms and protons and the Big Bang. And it makes me wonder, you know, if Buddha lived at this time, if a different guidance into this would have been used, and if that's useful for us. Because I know when I reflect on the oneness of the physical reality that this mysterious physical reality, that really creates a sense of, or leads to a sense of non-duality. And so I don't know if that's useful as well, but the piece missing from that is the attention to the details of the sensations in the body.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So do you have like a specific question about this, or is this more like a general?
It's just like an observation, and it would love your reflections on it, if any.
Okay. Yeah. So I think, yeah, it's interesting because science has found out so much more than at the time that they knew at the time of the Buddha. But my understanding is that that when you get deep into meditation, into like a deeper like jhana state, and you come out of that, you can see all these little particles, just like the science describes. And I assume that the Buddha saw that too, because he was, you know, so deep into the practice. So I think the four elements meditation might come from that, seeing those really direct experience, experiencing them with direct experience. Like, so I don't know if that's helpful, but I think that that like the some of the things we can maybe find a lot of things useful in this practice. And one of the things that I found really practical is to see like those direct sensations and not really put too many concepts on it. I think the science still puts a lot of concepts on it, while the Buddha kind of points to just see what's directly here, and then we see that it's just this changing phenomena that are not me or mine. So I don't know if that's helpful. Thanks for the question. Yes, Nicholas.
In the Bhikkhu Nandananda quote that you shared, I've always been intrigued by the foulness, because I think, I guess how I experienced, you know, my own defecation or urination or exhale is it's kind of neutral. Like it's not, I don't feel repelled by it. I don't feel particularly enamored by it. And so I'm kind of curious to hear maybe your own experience around like what foulness means and maybe how that can be onward leading in practice.
Yeah, I think for us Westerners, it's, or often it's a little bit different than for Asian people, maybe grown up in an Asian culture. Also at the time of the Buddha, like some of those words that the Buddha used were like disgust and at times, for example, and we might see it a little bit differently. And I think that doesn't really matter too much whether you see it as foulness or just as neutral. It's just there, right? And we can still do the practice. We don't have to see it as foulness. We can just stay with close to our own experience, and we don't have to try to elicit this foulness or the disgust or whatever the Buddha describes.
Yeah, maybe to follow up, maybe the thing being pointed to that's more helpful is the transformation aspect of kind of seeing that food comes in and food goes out, and there's some process of kind of continuity there through all of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's more relevant than seeing it as foul. Yeah. Yeah, Maureen.
Yes, I understand that having this knowledge of the elements can be very helpful to reach the point where you understand about non-duality and about impermanence. So where can we find these details about the elements? Because that would give at least me the opportunity to train with them, to recognize things.
Yeah, they might be named maybe slightly differently, I'm not sure, in the Visuddhimagga, which is a commentary of the 5th century. Let me see if I can type that into the chat. And otherwise, yeah, there are different teachers who teach about them. I think the actual like experiences, the actual aspects of the elements are slightly different with every teacher. So I'm using what I've learned from the Pa'auk method, which I find helpful. So that's why I'm teaching it. And it's more about the direct experience and less about the names that we give that experience. So it can be helpful, like when we do the scan, to have some reference. But at some point, we can let that reference also go and just experience the different sensations in the body without all the labels. But the labels can be useful in the beginning for sure, just to get us going. For those who want it, I can also email them again if you put your email address in the chat. Or for those, I don't know the email address yet, but that might be an option too. You got a few minutes left if there's any more questions or things to share. Gabe.
Thank you for the talk. I'm just reflecting right now. I'm experiencing some anger and sadness, and I'm just finding just naturally after the talk, this interest or just this awareness of temperature, and just finding that, and you know, the mind actually being interested in that dynamic process of, you know, change and sensation and temperature, and like that it's very alive and dynamic. So I'm just appreciating that as maybe a way to, you know, not turn away from intense emotion, but kind of be in a mindful relationship to it instead of kind of getting caught up in reactivity. So just appreciating this frame.
Yeah, that's beautiful, babe. I experienced that myself too, like when there's a lot of emotion going on, it can be so useful to do a body contemplation like this, to just tune back into the body, and then the mind becomes less interested in the big emotion, and then the big emotion kind of subsides in the background. It can be a very useful and skillful thing to do at times, and it it's maybe not skillful, and times it is. We just have to kind of tune in for ourselves. And clearly at this time, it's very skillful for you to just hang out with the bodily sensations, with the elements. Yeah, that's great. Thanks.